The Big Lead is brought to you by 3010 Weight Loss for Life.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Silver Oak Studio. Welcome. It's the start of a new week, the dawn of a new era. Welcome to this Monday afternoon edition of The Dory Monson Show. 3 hours of outstanding news analysis ahead of us this afternoon. Oh, man. Had a great weekend. Got more rest than I've gotten in months. I'll tell you what, salt water makes you want to rest. A friend of mine, one of my longest time friends, going back to high school, he and his wife, their daughter, they bought a house on the north end of Whidbey, high bank, sweeping view, Mount Baker straight ahead, sat out on the deck till late and then went and slept for 10 hours. That never happens to me. There's something about salt water that just rejuvenates the soul. I'm telling you. That's why all my fishermen friends are so healthy all the time. So rested, ready to go, ready to tackle all the news of the day. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
We told you about a story a week or so ago. Gary Horker, our friend at Cairo 7, he had the story about an apartment building on Capitol Hill that was broken into by a 46-year-old man. Now, the man who broke into this apartment, his name is Stanley Redd. And Stanley Redd, there's video of him crawling on top of a dumpster, and then he crawls up to a second-floor balcony. And in that second-floor apartment, the resident there had cracked the door just a little bit because it was a warm June evening. And Stanley Redd saw the cracked door. So he climbs up the dumpster, climbs up over the balcony railing, and walks into the apartment. Stanley Redd had a duffel bag. The duffel bag had a hatchet in it. And then he also had a backpack, and the backpack had an axe in it. And so when he broke into this guy's apartment, Harry Stelter, he said, yeah, it's the middle of the day, broad daylight, second floor, and this guy climbs up and breaks in.
The door was cracked to let some air into the apartment, and he climbed up from the alleyway down there.
And that's when Henry told Gary Horker that he did see the weapons that this guy was carrying.
He was also wearing a glove that had a metal spike sticking out the front of it.
Okay, so you got a hatchet, you got an axe, and you have a spiked glove. Usually that doesn't lead to anything good. So it was his dog, actually, that alerted Harry that there was somebody, or Henry rather, that there was somebody in the apartment.
That's when I went back and grabbed my pistol. And at that point, he had seen me. And he started walking down the hallway towards me, and he had started reaching for the axe on his back.
Okay, thank goodness this guy had a gun to defend himself. Because who knows what Stanley Redd would have done with his axe and his hatchet that he was reaching for. And Henry was instead able, even though the guy was just spewing nonsense, he was just making no sense whatsoever, but Henry was able to, with his gun pointed at the intruder, was able to kind of walk him back and get the guy to go back out onto the balcony and climb out of the apartment.
I just kept telling him he needs to get out. And he then started cursing at me. He was saying all sorts of random things that I couldn't really make out, but just, you know, swear words over and over again as I slowly backed him up.
Okay. So he was able to get the guy out of the apartment. But here's where the story just gets Seattle surreal. Because the guy wasn't in any big hurry to get away. And the police were able to come and find Stanley Redd not far from the apartment building in which he had just broken in. But the police didn't seem that interested in the case. They didn't ask for the security video that Henry and other residents of the apartment had that showed this guy breaking in. They just didn't seem that interested in the case at all. Well, it turns out it goes to the Seattle City Attorney's Office. And Pete Holmes decides to kick Stanley Redd loose with no charges. Now, again, Gary Horker at Cairo 7, he got this psych eval that Stanley Redd had to undergo. And it says that he was just incoherent, pretty much. Didn't have any cohesive thought pattern. And so the city attorney, Pete, smoke 'em if you got 'em, Holmes, the city attorney says, well, let's just kick this guy loose with no charges. And when the guy whose apartment was broken into by this maniac with an axe and a hatchet, when he heard that Stanley Redd was released with no charges?
Definitely very worrying that, you know, that he could just show up right now. You know, he showed up in broad daylight last time. Who knows what could happen now?
Okay, now I'm going to have a very important update on this story in just a moment here. But at the time, Gary Horker explained to Cairo 7's audience why Stanley Redd was released.
Cairo 7 News obtained Stanley Redd's mental competency evaluation, and it appears to be the reason he was set free without charges. State doctors apparently concluded Redd was incompetent to even understand why he was arrested, saying he has symptoms of psychosis, including rambling speech, thought disorganization, and delusions. The evaluation goes on to say Redd's charge was not a serious offense, according to state law, and the city attorney says he had no choice but to drop the case. Now the victims in this case are wondering about their own well-being and of Redd's.
Okay. I know this is unbelievable just in and of itself. Wait till you hear the new info that I have. But they turned the guy loose. Now, is he in some element of the psychiatric system? They won't tell us. They say that there are HIPAA protections, but there is nothing to suggest that Stanley Redd is in the system, involuntarily committed. There's nothing to suggest that in any of the court documents that we could find. And for the guy whose apartment was broken into, he said they didn't even try to make a case against this guy.
Nobody followed up and requested any sort of evidence. We have videos of him breaking in. We tried to give them to the police. We tried to give them to the prosecutor. Nobody accepted them. Nobody wanted them or seemed to care. It just seemed like a hindrance that we were trying to help in the situation.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Try to lock up a criminal and you're just looked at as a nuisance. It's just going to create more paperwork. Let's just turn the axe-wielding criminal loose. See if he kills anybody. Here's where the story gets an extraordinary update, thanks to a listener who tipped me off on this. Stanley Redd, who allegedly broke into that apartment, he's 46 years old. A listener sent me a Seattle Times story, Dateline March 10th, 1999. 22 years ago. And here's the headline. Three charged in death and cremation of toddler. Let me read to you from a 1999 Seattle Times story. Felony charges were filed this morning against three people accused of burning a 14-month-old baby's remains. First, they burned the baby's remains in a park, then in a fireplace to cover up the death of the 14-month-old baby. Charged with first-degree manslaughter, in the death of little Christopher Hutton, was 24-year-old Stanley Dion Redd. Now, unless this guy who broke into the apartment coincidentally has the same first, middle, and last name as the baby burner, and again, Stanley Redd today is 46 years old. 22 years ago, he would have been 24, and that's how old Stanley Dion Redd was when they burned this baby's body. So according to authorities, back in 1999, this 14-month-old baby was missing, and the King County prosecutor says that their office was shocked because of the tragic end to Christopher's short life. And it turns out the mother of the baby left his four-year-old brother in the care of Stanley Redd, who had, at the time, 1999, Stanley Redd had an extensive criminal history. The mom just went out of state on an unexplained trip. When she returned home, Stanley Redd had the four-year-old, but he did not have the 14-month-old baby. And prosecutors were called in, police were called in, and Stanley Redd said, oh, Christopher drowned in a bathtub when I went to the store to buy beer. But since they burned the body, the prosecutors could not tell if Stanley Redd was telling the truth. The prosecutors did not know if the little boy actually did drown when Stanley went to the store to buy beer. And because they didn't have a body, because the body had been cremated in a park and then in a fireplace, they could not seek murder charges against Stanley Redd. And the prosecutor at the time, Norm Mailing, said he could only file a charge of manslaughter, not murder, which had just a fraction of the sentence that a murder of a baby would have created. Now think about this. And again, thank you to the listener who tipped me off, because I had not heard the connection between this Capitol Hill apartment break-in a couple of weeks ago and a baby's body being cremated 22 years ago. But I want you to think about our city prosecutor, Pete Smoke-Em-If-You-Got-Em Holmes, turning this guy loose with no charges after he breaks into an apartment carrying a hatchet and an axe and a spiked glove. If my listeners can find out that this guy was convicted of killing a baby 22 years ago, I guarantee you that Pete Holmes could have figured that out and that they could have said, you know what, maybe this is not the kind of guy we should turn loose on the streets of Seattle. But unless with medical disclosure not being available to us, unless he's being held involuntarily in a psych ward somewhere, presumably Stanley Redd is a free man today. Free to break into apartments. Free to kill another baby. Who knows what's next? But this is where we're supposed to be able to trust our prosecutors, our city attorneys, our legal system to protect the most vulnerable among us. And I think a 14-month-old baby would qualify as the most vulnerable among us. But because they cremated the body, they couldn't even get a murder charge against the guy. And they had to just accept. He said, yeah, the kid accidentally drowned in a bathtub. Now, why, if a kid accidentally drowned, why you would then burn the body is beyond me. But this shows that, you know, this is not a 2021 issue in our region. For decades now, we've been letting some of the most heinous criminals walk free, which is why some of the most heinous criminals in the country migrate to the Puget Sound area, because this is where you can burn babies' bodies and be free just a couple of years later. You can walk into apartments with axes and hatchets and spiked gloves and not get any charges against you. What's it going to take? I say this all the time. There were three more incidents over the weekend of stuff being thrown off of overpasses onto I-5. Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday morning, a car was badly damaged in the attack yesterday. Only one arrest was made. It's homeless people who are doing this. I heard that there was a fire this morning, two-alarm fire. In the U District, 52nd and University, an abandoned house went up in flames. And as I was watching the coverage of that, they said the cause of the fire is unknown. maybe it's officially unknown. I'll lay big time odds that I can tell you the cause of that fire in the U District this morning. Some meth addict broke into the house, was camping out inside the house, fell asleep while using meth, the pipe drops, sets the house on fire, and all of a sudden you've got a two-alarm fire raging in the U District at 10:30 this morning. It all ties together. We have decided to make this the magnet destination for drug addicts, for criminals, for baby killers all around the country. And we still have people in the prosecutor's office, the city attorney's office, who say, well, what we used to do with drugs wasn't working. Worked a heck of a lot better than this. Got to start locking people up again. You got to start protecting us from the killers and the axe wielders who are out there. But as long as we have people in power whose social justice cause is to get as many violent criminals walking the streets as possible, we are going to have more innocent people who are harmed, injured, and perhaps murdered. We're going to have more arsons like we have. We're going to have more accidental fires. This is all very planned at the very top of our local government. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Well, we are losing one of the really, really terrific public servants in this area. I've gotten to know the Bellevue Police Chief, Steve Milette, a little bit over the 6 years that he's been the chief in Bellevue. And I've been very impressed with him. And now he's leaving for a similar job in Akron, Ohio. Akron, why? Why Akron? I'll ask him that. Steve Milette joins me next. The outgoing Bellevue Police Chief coming up here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, I have to admit, while I'm personally happy because I'm sure this man is making a move for all the right reasons, I am in a lot of ways very disappointed that City of Bellevue and that our region is losing Bellevue Police Chief Steve Milette, who it was announced is moving to Akron, Ohio to become the police chief there. And I want to know why. Chief Milette joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Chief, always great to talk with you. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me, Dory.
Yeah, and as I said, I've grown to admire you very much, and we talked quite a bit last year when there were some really troubling times, probably the most troubling I've ever seen for law enforcement around here, and I thought the way that you handled those challenges was admirable and something that I just always had great respect for. So as I said, on that level, I'm disappointed for our region to be losing you.
Well, I appreciate it, and I thank you for all your kind words and the support that you've shown me since I've been here, and you know, the men and women of the Bellevue Police Department and law enforcement regionally. Yeah, I'll tell you, it's definitely been a tough decision. And it was a combination of things that led to me to make my decision. But when you drill it down, it all comes really down to my family. You know, my wife and I want to be near our kids and our grandkids. And, you know, my kids want a path towards home ownership. They're young. They're just getting started in their lives and their marriages. And, you know, Akron can certainly, you know, provide them that path forward. But, you know, there are a lot of things that I'm going to miss here in Bellevue. And, you know, the people first and foremost are the things that come to mind. But, you know, there's a lot of things that I've grown fond of in Akron already. And the people, Dory, I'm telling you, they're so welcoming and friendly and engaged, just like the Bellevue community is with, you know, the city here. And, you know, whatever my experiences have led me to in this point in my life, right, I'm hoping that you know, it can help over there in Akron with some of the challenges they're experiencing right now.
Well, and I was going to try to dig down and find out why you're doing this. And what you just said sure speaks to me as a dad, because, you know, I have three adult daughters, and the idea of them being able to buy a home here in the greater Seattle area, it's going to be really tough. It's going to be very challenging. So are your kids back there, or are you hoping they will follow you back there? What's going on family-wise with that?
I've got one that I've already hooked. So he's coming with us. He's about to get married here, I think, in the next couple of weeks. It's my son Christian, and he's our youngest. He's still serving in the Marine Corps. He did 6 years active, and now he's back in the reserves. But he's already committed. He's going. He's actually going to pull out with us when we leave. My son Steven, who is here and loves Western Washington, I almost got him hooked as well. He's talking about it. He just got married recently, and he and his wife are going to be starting a family, and they want to be close to Joanne and I, and you know their kids to be close to grandma and grandpa. Anna, my number three child, is in Colorado Springs, and I'm working on it, and I think I'm going to get her as well. But the holdout, Dory, is going to be my oldest daughter, Valerie. She's down in Corpus Christi, and she loves it down there. But her and her husband and her two kids, I think all it's going to take is, you know, one of the winners get the kids up there playing the snow. Okay. And then, you know, you get the kids first, and then they work on the parents, right? So I'm working on it.
Okay. Now, Akron has its challenges. I saw that as of about a month ago now, they were on pace to exceed last year's 56 murders. You know, Seattle is seeing that level of violence. Bellevue has some, not quite to that level. But you're going to have some pretty significant challenges there in Akron, it looks like.
Yeah, it does. You know, the what I've been able to determine is that the police department there is similar to our officers here. It's very professional, very engaged with the community. They are working, as you know, in a collaborative way to find solutions. But you know, I'm not going to know until I actually get there. I've learned that going from Corpus to Southlake and then Southlake to here, you really don't know until you land. But I get a sense that what's leading the violent crime there is not so much, you know, gang activity or drugs. It sounds like, and I may be wrong on this, like I said, I won't know until I get there, is that, you know, it all comes down to conflict resolution skills. And that's not something the police department can, you know, solve on its own. And one of the things that attracted me there, Dory, is that, again, just like Bellevue, the Akron community is very engaged with the city and the police department, and the mayor, Mayor Horgan over there, is just doing a phenomenal job connecting with all of the Akron community. Yeah, so.
As you know, Chief, I didn't think, everybody knew. There were some significant problems in the Bellevue PD before you came aboard. And I honestly don't remember if it was one or two regimes before you, but I was very critical. There were some serious problems. You acknowledged that right up front. You set out to rectify the communications issues and some of the other problems. When you head back to Akron, Ohio, what are you going to look back on as your single greatest accomplishment as the police chief in Bellevue?
Wow. That's a good question. It's a tough question. You know, I think the establishment of the Tomorrow's program, it's got three buckets: community engagement or community connection, process improvement, and employee development, wellness, and recognition. And each one has its own track. But under the process improvement, you know, I inherited, you know, I know you were critical of the department before I got here, and I'm sure there was cause for it. But what I saw when I got here, I inherited a good police department. They were hardworking men and women. but there were some issues with our systems here that needed to get adjusted. So together, we, you know, it's never about the people. It's about the systems that produce the results. And I got, actually, I learned a lot of that from my good friend, James Whitfield. It's systems. If you want a different result, you got to look at the systems that's creating the result. And we made some tweaks to our system, and, you know, it's producing different results. So I think that tomorrow's program, and then this, just the willingness, Dory, of people trusting me to lead and, you know, and to follow. And,
Yeah, but you earned that trust. You worked on a daily basis very diligently to earn that trust. So I'm not at all surprised by that.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but as you know, it's not a one person show. So I had a lot of talent surrounding me. I had, again, the willingness of our line employees to follow the direction in which we were going, and then a willingness from our community to engage. And it all starts with our city council and my boss, Brad Miyake, allowing me to run the police department. That was huge.
And then let me flip that question around, just in closing here. Any unfinished business that you will leave with some regret that you didn't get done in Bellevue?
I think the biggest one, and it's staring me in the face right now because I have his picture on my desk. I look at him every single day, and that's Sky Metawalla. And the fact that we were not able to solve this issue. And again, as I depart, I make one last plea to his mother, Julia Barakova, to please come forward and engage with our detectives and to bring Sky home and let's get it done. It's been too long. It's been too long.
Yeah, about 10 years since he disappeared. Well, Chief, I hope we have a chance to talk again down the road, but I greatly admire how you handled all the difficult situations you encountered, how you dealt with people like me and others who, you know, it's our job to connect you with the public. I think you've just done a really admirable job, and I wish there were more. And I know you come from a family of, your dad was a cop, you told me, right? Dad was a cop.
He was, yeah.
Your son's in the military, you just said. So you come from a family of service.
Absolutely, yeah. My dad, my uncles, cousins, my brothers, all, you know, police service and everything. Again, I learned a lot from my father, and the one thing that he instilled in me on day one when I was going into policing is that it's all about service and it's all about serving the public. And I never forgot that.
Steve Milet, the Bellevue police chief, on his way to Akron, Ohio. Chief, great talking with you. Appreciate the time, and hope we can stay in touch.
Thanks, Dory. Take care.
All right, Steve Milet, the Bellevue police chief, who's leaving for this gig in Akron. Love to hear your thoughts. You can text me at 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. Revenues going, got to keep the books cooking. The pharmaceutical companies, they are figuring out ways, after record revenues over the last year, how can they keep it going? What's the next market? 70% of Americans, or, you know, 60-some percent, have been vaccinated. We got to get the children vaccinated. This morning, Pfizer said that they are looking at maybe the necessity of a booster shot for the Delta variant. Are you sick of hearing about the Delta variant? It's always said with grave tones. Yeah, we survived up till now, but we won't survive the Delta variant. Unless you get a booster. And then we can have government send Pfizer a few $100 million more of our dollars. Then everything will be fine. I find it amazing the length to which so many people in the media are going to boost the revenues of the pharmaceutical companies. And then politicians, of course, too. Last week, I told you about how Joe Biden said that he's thinking about sending out federal jackbooted thugs. Well, he didn't use that phrase, but he was thinking about sending out feds to go door to door to try to get the unvaccinated vaxxed.
Because here's the deal. We are continuing to wind down the mass vaccination sites that did so much in the spring to rapidly vaccinate those eager to get their first shot and their second shot, for that matter, if they needed a second. Now we need to go to community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and oftentimes door to door, literally knocking on doors, to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus.
I wonder how fast I can slam a door in somebody's face, even though I've been vaxxed. I'm not going to have somebody come up and ask me medical questions at my door, at my house. You know, I compared that to Joe Biden's gun hero, Beto O'Rourke, who, when he was on the campaign trail, he was also going to go door to door.
You know, in that case, I think there would be a visit by law enforcement to recover that firearm and to make sure that it is purchased, bought back, so that it cannot be potentially used against somebody else.
Yeah, they'll make sure they can buy back the guns. And if we don't voluntarily let them, then they'll take them away door to door. There's a lot of door to door stuff. Biden administration's like Avon all of a sudden. But then the new audio that I have for you today, CNN has a medical contributor, Dr. Liana Wen. And the doctor says, if you have chosen to not get the vaccine, then government should make your life as difficult as possible.
So now we have this Delta variant that is much more contagious. Because it's more contagious, it's going to be even harder for us to reach herd immunity. We're going to have to vaccinate an even higher proportion of people to get there. What happens then if we end up having another variant developing that's even more contagious, that could cause more disease, that could evade the protection of our immune system? And so how quickly we get this under control and which way we go depends on what we do now when it comes to vaccination, to overcoming disinformation. And what we really need to do at this point is to make vaccination the easy choice. It needs to be hard for people to remain unvaccinated. Right now, it's kind of the opposite. It's fine. I mean, it's easy if you're unvaccinated. You can.
Did you listen to this? She says that the government needs to make life hard on the people who choose to not get the vaccine. And I've told you, I have friends who had COVID, who have the antibodies, who don't need or want the vaccine. And you have a CNN doctor saying, well, we should make their life as miserable and as hard as possible. And she wants them tested twice a week, so that that'll add to their misery.
And do everything you wanted to do anyway. But at some point, these mandates by workplaces, by schools, I think it will be important to say, hey, you can opt out. But if you want to opt out, you have to sign these forms. You have to get twice weekly testing. Basically, we need to make getting vaccinated the easy choice. That is what it's going to take for us to actually end the pandemic.
You'll have to sign forms and get tested twice a week. That's how they want to make your life miserable. If you have chosen, especially if you're in your teens, 20s, 30s, there's no reason for you to get vaccinated. But she wants government to make your life miserable, or if you have the antibodies from having had COVID. It's a cult, I tell you. And we'll check the news, and then the Fastest 15 is coming up next.